in the history department at Middlewood. Only a few women professors at the college at all. When would James meet another woman? And a terrible thought occurs to her. She takes down the phone book and skims down the C's until she finds it. The only Chan in Middlewood. L. Chan, 105 4th Street, number 3A. A telephone number. She nearly reaches for the receiver, but what would she say? Hello, do you know where my husband is? Without shutting the phone book, she grabs her keys from the counter. Stay here, she says, both of you. I'll be back in half an hour. 4th Street is near the college, a student-heavy area of town, and even as she turns down it, squinting at building numbers, Marilyn has no plan. Maybe, she thinks, Nath is all wrong. Maybe she is making a fool of herself. She feels like an overtuned violin, strung too tight, so that even the slightest vibration sets her humming. Then, in front of number 97, she sees James's car, parked beneath a scrubby maple. 4 stray leaves dot its windshield. Now she feels strangely calm. She parks the car, lets herself into 105, and climbs the steps to the 3rd floor, where with one steady fist she raps at 3A. It is nearly 11, and when the door opens, just wide enough to reveal Louisa, still in a pale blue robe, Marilyn smiles. Hello, she says. It's Louisa, isn't it? Louisa Chan? I'm Marilyn Lee. When Louisa does not respond, she adds, James Lee's wife. Oh, yes, Louisa says. Her eyes flick away from Marilyn's. I'm sorry, I'm not dressed yet. I can see that. Marilyn sets her hand on the door, holding it open with one palm. I'll just take a moment of your time. You see, I'm looking for my husband. He didn't come home last night. Oh? Louisa swallows hard, and Marilyn pretends not to notice. How terrible. You must be very worried. I am. Very worried. She keeps her eyes trained on Louisa's face. They have met only twice before, in passing at the college Christmas party, and then at the funeral. And Marilyn studies her carefully now. Long, ink-colored hair, long lashes over downturned eyes, small mouth like a doll's. A shy little thing. As far from me, she thinks with a twinge, as a girl could be. Do you have any idea where he might be? Louisa blushes bright pink, and Marilyn feels almost sorry for her, she is so transparent. Why would I know? You're his assistant, aren't you? You work together every day? She pauses. He speaks of you so often at home. He does? Confusion and pleasure and surprise mingle in Louisa's face, and Marilyn can see exactly what is running through her mind. That Louisa, she's so smart, so talented, so beautiful. She thinks, oh, Louisa, how young you are. Well, Louisa says at last, have you checked his office? He wasn't there earlier, Marilyn says. Perhaps he's there now. She sets her hand on the doorknob. Could I use your telephone? Louisa's smile vanishes. I'm sorry, she says. My phone's actually not working right now. She looks desperately at Marilyn, as if wishing she would just give up and go away. Marilyn waits, letting Louisa fidget. Her hands have stopped shaking. Inside, she feels a quiet, smoldering rage. Thank you anyway, she says. You've been very helpful. She lets her eyes drift past Louisa, to the tiny sliver of living room she can see through the doorway. And Louisa glances back over her shoulder nervously, as if James might have wandered out of the bedroom unawares. If you see him, Marilyn adds, raising her voice, tell my husband that I'll see him at home. Louisa swallows again. I will, she says. And at last, Marilyn lets her shut the door. 9. A few months earlier, a different illicit romance had been brewing. To Nath's immense disapproval, all spring Lydia had spent her afternoons out with Jack in his car, driving round and round town, or parking the VW near the green quad of the college, or by the playground, or in a deserted parking lot. Despite what Nath thought, to Lydia's smug satisfaction, despite the whispers now and then when someone glimpsed her climbing into Jack's car, she's not, is she? No way. Her? Can't be. Despite Lydia's own expectations, the truth was much less scandalous. While the college students scurried to class, or kindergartners scaled the slide, or bowlers trudged into the alley for a quick after-work game, something happened that Lydia had never expected. She and Jack talked. As they sat smoking, feet propped on the dashboard, she told him stories about her parents. How in second grade, she'd traced the diagram of the heart from the encyclopedia, labeling each ventricle with magic marker, and her mother had pinned it up on her bedroom wall as if it were a masterpiece. How at 10, her mother had taught her to take a pulse. How at 12, her mother had persuaded her to skip Cat Malone's birthday party, the only one she'd ever been invited to finish her science fair project. How her father had insisted she go to the freshman dance and bought her a dress, and she had spent the night standing in the darkest corner of the gym, counting the minutes until she could go home. How late was late enough? 8:30? 9? At first, she tried not to mention Nath, remembering how Jack hated him. But she could not talk about herself without Nath. And to her surprise, Jack asked questions. Why did Nath want to be an astronaut? Was he quiet at home like he was at school? So she told him how, after the moon landing, he had bounded across the lawn, pretending to be Neil Armstrong for days. How in sixth grade, he'd convinced the librarian to let him borrow from the adults section and brought home textbooks on physics, flight mechanics, aerodynamics. How he'd asked for a telescope for his 14th birthday and received a clock radio instead. How he'd saved his allowance and bought himself one. How, sometimes at dinner, Nath never said a word about his day because their parents never asked. Jack absorbed everything, lighting her next cigarette as she flicked the old butt out the window, tossing her his pack when she ran out. Week after week, she tamped down a flare of guilt at making Nath seem even more pathetic, because talking about Nath kept her in Jack's car every afternoon, and every afternoon she spent in Jack's car bothered Nath more and more. Now, in mid-April, Jack had started teaching Lydia to drive. At the end of the month, she would be 16. Think of the gas pedal and the clutch as partners, he said. When one goes up, the other goes down. Under Jack's direction, Lydia let the clutch out slowly and tapped the gas with her toe, and the VW crept forward across the empty parking lot of the roller rink on Route 17. Then the engine stalled, slamming her shoulders into the seat back. Even after a week of practice, the violence of this moment still surprised her, how the whole car jolted and fell silent, as if it had had a heart attack. Try again, Jack said. He set his foot on the dashboard and pushed in the cigarette lighter.
Nice and slow. Clutch in, gas out.
At the far end of the parking lot, a police car pulled in and executed a neat U-turn, pointing its nose toward the street.
They're not looking for us, Lydia told herself.
Route 17, out at the edge of town, was a notorious speed trap. Still, the black and white car kept catching her eye. She turned the key and restarted the car and stalled again, almost at once.
Try again, Jack repeated, pulling a pack of Marlboros from his pocket. You're in too much of a hurry.
She had not realized this, but it was true. Even the 2 weeks until her birthday, when she could get her learner's permit, seemed eternal. When she had her license, Lydia thought, she could go anywhere. She could drive across town, across Ohio, all the way to California if she wanted to. Even with Nath gone, her mind shied from the thought. She would not be trapped alone with her parents. She could escape any time she chose. Just thinking about it made her legs twitch, as if itching to run.
Slowly, she thought, taking a deep breath.
Just like partners, one goes up, the other goes down. James had promised to teach her to drive their sedan as soon as she had her permit. But Lydia did not want to learn in their car. It was sedate and docile, like a middle-aged mare. It buzzed gently, like a watchful chaperone if you didn't fasten your seatbelt.
After you get your license, her father said, we'll let you take the car out on Friday nights with your friends.
If you keep your grades up, her mother would add, if she was around. Lydia sank the clutch to the floor and started the engine again and reached for the gear shift. It was almost 5:30, and her mother would expect her soon. When she tried to let out the clutch, her foot slipped off the pedal. The car bucked and died. The eyes of the policeman and the cruiser flicked toward them, then back toward the road. Jack shook his head.
We can try again tomorrow.
The coils of the lighter glowed as he pulled it from the socket and pressed a cigarette to its center, the end singeing black against the hot metal, then orange, as if the color had bled. He passed it to Lydia, and once they had switched seats, lit another for himself.
You almost had it, he said, wheeling the car toward the exit of the parking lot.
Lydia knew this was a lie, but she nodded. Yeah, she said hoarsely. Next time. As they turned onto Route 17, she blew a long column of smoke out toward the police car.
So are you going to tell your brother we've been hanging out, and I'm not such a bad guy?
Jack asked when they were nearly home.
Lydia grinned.
She suspected that Jack still took other girls out. Some days he and the VW were nowhere to be found. But with her, he was practically gentlemanly. He had never even held her hand. So what if they were only friends? Most days, she was the one climbing into his car, and she knew this had not escaped Nath's attention. At dinner time, while she spun stories for her mother about her grades and her extra credit project, or for her father about Shelley's new perm or Pam's obsession with David Cassidy, Nath watched her, half angry, half afraid, as if he wanted to say something but didn't know how. She knew what he was thinking, and she let him. Some evenings, she came into Nath's room, plopped down on his windowsill, and lit a smoke, daring him to say something. Now, Lydia said, you would never believe me. She hopped out a block early, and Jack turned the corner and pulled into his driveway while she trotted home, as if she'd walked the whole way herself. Tomorrow, she thought,
She would pop the car into first, and they would roll across the parking lot, white lines whipping beneath the wheels. On top of the pedals, her feet would feel comfortable, her insteps supple. Soon she would glide down the highway, shifting into third, then fourth, speeding off somewhere all on her own. It didn't turn out that way. At home, in her room, Lydia flicked on the record player, where the album Hannah had given her for Christmas was already in place. To Lydia's surprise, she had been playing it over and over. She set the needle an inch and a half from the edge, aiming for the start of her favorite song, but overshot, and Paul Simon's voice suddenly soared into the room. "Hey, let your honesty shine, shine, shine." A faint knocking punched through the music, and Lydia twisted the volume knob as loud as it would go. In a moment, Marilyn, knuckles smarting, opened the door and leaned in. "Lydia! Lydia!" When her daughter didn't turn around, Marilyn lifted the arm of the record player and the room went quiet, the record spinning helplessly beneath her hand. "That's better. How can you think with that on?" "It doesn't bother me." "Are you done with your homework already?" No answer. Marilyn pursed her lips. "You know, you shouldn't be listening to music if you haven't finished your schoolwork." Lydia picked at a hangnail. "I'll do it after dinner." "Better get started now, don't you think? Make sure you have time to finish it all and do a careful job." Marilyn's face softened. "Sweetheart, I know high school may not feel important, but it's the foundation of the rest of your life." She perched on the arm of Lydia's chair and stroked her daughter's hair. It was so crucial to make her understand, but she didn't know how. A quiver had crept into Marilyn's voice, but Lydia didn't notice. "Trust me, please. Don't let your life slip away from you." "Oh, God," Lydia thought. "Not again." She blinked fiercely and focused on the corner of her desk, where some article her mother had clipped months ago still sat, furred now with dust. "Look at me." Marilyn cupped Lydia's chin in her hand and thought of all the things her own mother had never said to her, the things she had longed her entire life to hear. "You have your whole life in front of you. You can do anything you want." She paused, looking over Lydia's shoulder at the shelf crammed with books, the stethoscope atop the bookshelf, the neat mosaic of the periodic table. "When I'm dead, that's all I want you to remember." She meant, "I love you. I love you." But her words sucked the breath from Lydia's lungs. "When I'm dead." All through that long-ago summer, she had thought her mother might really be dead, and those weeks and months had left a persistent, insistent ache in her chest, like a pulsing bruise. She had promised anything her mother wanted, anything at all, as long as her mother stayed. "I know, Mom," she said. "I know." She tugged her notebook from her book bag. "I'll get started." "That's my girl." Marilyn kissed her on the head, right where her hair parted, and Lydia inhaled at last. Shampoo, detergent, peppermint. A scent she had known all her life. A scent that every time she smelled it, she realized she had missed. She curled her arms around Marilyn's waist, pulling her close, so close she could feel her mother's heartbeat against her cheek. "Enough of that," Marilyn said at last, swatting Lydia playfully on the behind. "Get to work. Supper will be ready in half an hour." All through dinner, the conversation with her mother writhed inside Lydia. She steeled herself with one thought. Later, She would tell Nath all about it, and then she would feel better.